Okay, so today, what are we doing today? So as I said last week we did a whole beautiful idea about Hashem being everywhere, right? About the two psukim which tell us that there's nothing besides Hashem, Einoid Milvadai. And actually on your sheet there is, did I bring myself one of those? I have it in the computer. Before we go into what we're really going to do today, because today we're going to look at the Ten Commandments, and specifically at the last one today. Go a bit out of order. But just before we do that, there's one very nice idea on the front of your sheets on page number one. So I'm just going to share, and then we'll see. And that is based on something that we did last week. And as I said, those two psukim that we did last week, we mentioned the second of the two psukim were V'yadaita hayom, you should know today, V'hashevoysel of Avecha Sar Shila, good morning, we just started. And you should put it on your heart that Hashem, that there's only one God, and as we said, it actually divides it, Mishamai, that there's one God in the heavens above, in the earth below, and there is no other. So we mentioned it at length, and we're not going to go at length, but I wanted to show you one beautiful practical thing, and then we're going to move on. So if you look at your sheets in front of you, I think I did number it, so it says page 114, but it's page one, right, of the booklet, because I know it's double-sided. So if you look at the second column, I wanted to show you something nice. Let's see. Oh, maybe not. Is it 115? What do you have in front of you? What did you... 114. I'm just thinking if I want to do anything from that inside or not. I shouldn't have made that copy. Okay, that was a mistake. Okay. All right. Okay, you know, I'm sorry. Go to page 115. Go to page number 2. Sorry, I didn't know what you were saying. Okay. On page number 2 in the second column where it says a Zion, so there's a very beautiful idea. It says here like this. Yeder inyan is eich faran ba'avodas kol echad ve'echad. Everything that we learned about, even in the high, you know, and all the philosophical ideas, we can apply them not only philosophically, in perspective, as we said, there's only one God, and everything comes from God, as we mentioned last week, whether good, whether bad, and to see that nature is really godliness. But there's actually a practical application, and that's also how we internalize this message in our everyday life. How? So let's see what he says. He says like this. So in the every person, and in the, as we say, we are a small world, and every individual is like a whole world, and we can apply this. So the second paragraph says, "Der tachlis von jeden inyan." What's the purpose of everything? Von avodas Hashem, in our service of Hashem, as esal arot kumen in ma'ase v'payel. Really, everything has to come down into actual, practical application, action. That's the main part. You know, as a Jew, we have a lot of philosophical ideas. We have a lot of things that we learn about in depth. We talk about feelings. We talk about perspectives. But the truth is, the main thing as a Jew is what we actually do. We've got to do the right thing. And we have to be able to implement, as we say, with the mitzvahs. You can learn about them from today to tomorrow. If you don't do it, as we say, you know, you can meditate all about lighting the Shabbos candle. But if you don't light the Shabbos candle, you haven't done the mitzvah. So how do we apply this seemingly, and it's a deep philosophical idea about one God, no other God. What does that mean for us in our day-to-day, moment by moment? How do we really bring it down? So he says a very beautiful idea. It's like this. There are three steps to how we can really internalize and really make it real, this oneness of Hashem. So he says, Didrei Chalukas in Pasuk, and it's actually the way the Pasuk divides into three sort of distinct categories, if you want to say, that you should know that there's one God. So the first thing it says, Bashamayim Ima'al, in the heavens above, Beis al ha'aretz mitachas, in the earth below. And the third thing, ein oid, afilu b'chalolei shalolam, there is no other, even so to speak, in the whole vastness, in the whole hollow of the world. Okay, what are those three steps? Go to the next page. Okay, and I'll show you on page 116 on the top. Kedei di avaydas hayayim fana idin zal zayn kedibai, in order for our daily life should be proper, that we should be able to live a proper way, day by day, moment by moment. What do we have to do? Darv zayn di hachana lezeh, we have to have a preparation, and that is every single day, is what? Sheinasai balayla. The fact that you sleep at night. It's a funny thing, but many times we think that our day starts when we wake up. The truth is, if you think about it, in Yiddishkeit, the day starts the night before. And sleeping is an important component to our day. We all know, I think, when we get to a certain age, how important it is, because sometimes it's not easy to sleep, and it affects our day in such an incredible way. But sleeping is actually part of, and not only physically, but spiritually as well. What happens when we're asleep? So it's a very interesting idea. Vasdemelt is the neshama oila lamaila, you know, in the morning when we wake up, we have this idea that we wash negel maser. What's one of the main reasons? Because it says when a person sleeps, his neshama, not the whole neshama, but a large part of the neshama, actually ascends above. It recharges, as we can understand. It's really being plugged into its source. And then when we wake up in the morning, it's like we are born again. It's like we have had almost tchias hamesim. We've come back. We've sort of, sleep is a 60th of death. It's like a certain, and that's why we have to wash our hands from the impurity. But the idea is that our neshama is being recharged while we are sleeping. And now we wake up, hopefully we are recharged. We have been replugged in. We have remembered again who we truly are and who we're really dependent on. And that happens while we're sleeping. So that's bashamayim mima'al, because that's where the heaven, that's where the neshama goes, to heaven, so to speak, above, recharging in the godliness, so to speak. V'yesh leimer as eich derfar is miyad sheneir. That's why also we know as soon as somebody wakes up, take if and erect zich eif and shlof, as soon as he wakes up from sleep, hype der under seder hayayim mit amiras, as Roni always say, maidani, right? What's the first thing we do? We say maidani, right? That's the first thing. Why? What's the maidani lefanecha? Because we say, we thank Hashem for what? Shehachzarta bi nishmasi. You returned my neshama to me. So the truth is, we were very grateful for the neshama being returned, but sometimes we don't reflect upon the fact that what it means is that the neshama was in a different place and it's being returned. That's what returning means, right? That is also part of the process. It's not just, and of course that's the big part, that we thank you that we have the neshama now, but we're also reflecting that the neshama wasn't with us. Why? Because it was in its special place at night to get that recharge. And that's what we reflect upon when we wake up in the morning, which gives us an extra measure of strength to face the new day, because we realize that today we have strength that we didn't have yesterday. There's a new strength that we received. And that's why, even if the challenge was overwhelming before we went to sleep, hopefully today we'll find new kayach and we'll be able to face the challenge. So that's the first thing that we do. We reflect upon that. And we say, it's a haidah, like we're thanking Hashem, lefanecha, was hat im umgekehrt die neshama mit upgefrischte kayches. Upgefrischte kayches is a beautiful word, as we say in Yiddish, like fresh strength. We have new, fresh strength. We're like renewed, you know, young again, in a sense, because it came from the heavens. And then the next step, and then we say, Dernach, what's the next step? Step number two. Haibt sich an die Aveida von Itten. Then we start our Aveida, what we have to do. Zu peil sein, as die Neshama shalai, soll sich mispashet sein, in sein Guf. The purpose isn't that the neshama remains above. Obviously, the purpose is that the neshama is restored to us. But it shouldn't just remain that we're aware somewhere in the back of our mind, in our subconscious, that we have a neshama. The idea is that what's our purpose in life is that we are meant to feel the neshama. So we're meant to reveal the neshama in all parts of our life, in all parts of ourself, in all parts of our activities, and of course, in everybody that we meet. So that's the next step, is to bring down that neshama, that it should affect us in a way where we live with the neshama. So that's step number two. And that's, as we said, first it said, bashamayim imahal, and then the pasuk says, ba'aretz mitachas. We have to bring that neshama, take, down into this earth, into everything that we involve ourselves in the whole day. Interestingly, that we can divide into two parts. So we say like this. Two levels. On the top of the next column, the first thing we do is Avodas HaTfilah in shul or at home, wherever we daven. even if we say brachas in the morning. We must do that in the morning, and what does that do? And then we go mibeis haknesses lebeis hamedrash. The ideal thing is that after davening, we should also, in order to truly, that the davening should really affect our day, we have to learn a little bit. Vas durch zeh, is der ar haneshama zich mispashit in guf leprotav in yanav. When we daven and we learn, that allows, it's like the bridge that allows the neshama to become revealed and to affect us in our whole body. We feel it, right? We literally tap into it. That's what we're doing when we're davening and we're learning. So that's the first step of it. But we say this is still in the world of Kedusha, in the world of holiness. That's not where it must remain. Then we have to go based. Yavayda b'chalalei shel olam. Remember, the pasuk had a third category. Into the hollow of the earth, meaning to say in the depths, in the lowest parts of the earth, where it seems there's nothing godly, where it seems there's nothing holy, the most mundane, and sometimes even lower than just mundane. What do? He says there, hanhag bahen minhag derech eretz. That's the way we behave in our day-to-day moments of life. And what do? He says, v'sa'id farnemtzich mitinyonei harishus, when a Jew is acting, and that's what we're supposed to do, in all the regular things that we do, that we are permitted to do, that we have to do, our workday things, our normal things. He says, verin nitderman basar, and these things are not even mentioned in the 10, so to speak, sayings. And what do we do there? As durch der richtige Rachana von Avedasa Bashamayim Mimalf, Al Haaretz Mitakas. When we reflect, our neshama went up and got recharged, and then we said Maida'ani, then we davened, and then we learned. Then we have the third step, and we're able to implement that is a spekaychai, then he has the strength. Zu mamshich sein Getlichkeit, then he could bring the godliness even into the mundane. So it's actually a process, and it's an interesting process that sometimes we think, or we don't think, we that we can skip. It doesn't work. You don't sleep, it's trouble. You don't daven, you don't learn in the morning, it's not going to work. If we do all these things, so we sleep, and it's interesting with sleeping. I'm not so good at it, but a large part of being able to sleep, as we know, is when we go to sleep to actually have bitachon and to say, you know, God, you're going to got to put it all on him. Because a large part of not being able to sleep is all the things that our mind is racing. Our mind is worrying. Our heart is worrying. We're not calm. We're not able to just let go and calm down. So that's the first step. When we let go and calm down, our neshama can truly go up above and recharge. And that's what it does. We wake up in the morning, we say Maida'ani, we're recharged, and the neshama is really re-entering. And we're aware of the neshama. And then we daven and we learn. And then we start our day, and we actually bring godliness into every moment of our day. So this is the process that the pasuk is actually telling us, and it's a beautiful, how do you say it? It's a beautiful, if you want to say it's such a nice formula, that's what I'm looking for, that actually works. Okay, sometimes we say, what happens if we didn't sleep? Doesn't matter, we didn't sleep. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't say Maida'ani and Davin, because at least something. But hopefully the next night we'll be able to sleep. And that's the end of the formula. The truth is that if we live the day the way we're meant to live the day, then the truth is it's easier for us to sleep at night. So that's also part of it. It's also that during the day we should try and reflect on being a little calmer, releasing and letting go of some of that worry and some of that anxiety. And that will help us that at night, before we go to sleep, that we will, when we lay down, yes, be able to actually sleep. So it all works in this constant cycle. Okay, yes.
Practical question.
Yeah, no, good.
When one wakes up at 2, 3 in the morning.
Yes, we know, yes.
Are you in the same day?
I know. I don't think so. Unless you're actually getting up and staying up, you know? Because I think it's more like when it's already daybreak. I think maybe after 4 in the morning.
You've got to see the light.
You have to see the light. That's it. That's it. That's it. For, I think it's like 4:30 in the morning. All right. Then you can already say Maida'ani. But look, if you're going to be getting up and spending an hour or two up, and you know, then maybe, yeah, then you should say Maida'ani probably. But yeah, it's a, yeah.
I think you work in a
in the night?
I know, and you sleep. That's a good, you know what? That's a good question. I'm going to have to ask that. I know the shift workers, I know, like the nurses and the... Yeah, it's an interesting question. I'm not sure how that works. I imagine they say Maida'ani when they wake up if they've slept a few hours and this is their sleep time, you know? So, because that's when their neshama goes up. But yeah.
Now, what do you do when you're traveling?
Like on the airplane?
So, in a car.
In a car.
And you fall asleep in a car.
So,
you sleep for an hour or two.
That's, but if it's during the day. Oh, you should wash Negel Vasser if you can. Yeah, that's even during the day. I think if it's, they say if you've slept more than a half hour, then you're meant to wash Negel Vasser.
Mm-hmm.
As if you, you know, that's really the ideal. Yeah. But, yeah. So I know in the car it's harder because you don't have the water, but yeah. Yes. Okay. Oh, yes.
Also, when does it, when must a child start to recognize it in the same day?
Every family is different, but as early as you can. I mean, it doesn't have to be, you know, forced. But a lot of times in lots of homes, you find that, like, the mother or the father, whoever's waking up the child, will sing, like, that's how they'll wake them up, you know? Maida'ani, you know? And, but that's it, becomes a routine. Some people have a nice song they play, you know? But there's a beautiful one that you put on, and it's... But, yeah, you try. Earlier, the more, you know, the more it becomes automatic, in a way, the better. Although sometimes automatic is not good either, because we're not thinking what we're saying. But, yeah, but there's a bit of both. But yeah, okay. Now, open up your chumashim. And today, like I say, I'm going to be a bit out of order. It doesn't matter because this was more fascinating idea. But in page 970, that's in our parsha. So what you'll find on page 970 is the Ten Commandments. You'll see them. Now we know that I'm sorry, it's not here in your copies. Everybody who's listening online, you can open up a chumash or just listen. But we know, as we mentioned last week, that the Ten Commandments are actually repeated. In other words, really the Ten Commandments, we just read them 2 weeks ago, Parshas Yisrael. That's when it happened, when the Jews left Egypt, they crossed the sea, and then they came to Har Sinai, and they received the Torah. But when Moshe Rabbeinu is repeating and reviewing everything within his long speech before he passes away, obviously, the Aseres HaDibros are one of the main things that he wants to leave everybody with. So he repeats the Ten Commandments, and we have that in Parshas Ve'eschanan, the one that we are learning. Now, what is fascinating and up for a lot of discussion, and we're going to go more in depth next week, is that there are certain differences between the way it's recorded in Parshas Yisrael to the way it's written in Parshas Ve'eschanan. And that's difficult to understand because the Torah was given to us once. Now, which one is the correct one? Which one did God say, right? So on a simple level, the simplest way to explain it is that in Yisrael, it's how we heard it from God. In Ve'eschanan, it's how Moshe Rabbeinu is repeating it. So it could be that he makes certain changes because that will be more understood for us, or perhaps, if you think about it, and we'll see one change today, because in Parshas Yisrael, when we received the Ten Commandments, we know we were on the highest level possible, right? We had just left Egypt, we crossed the sea, and the most beautiful thing happened when they approached the mountain. We all know that everybody was healed. Like, there's a fascinating thing that it says everybody could hear the Ten Commandments, everybody could see the godliness. Anybody who had any physical challenges before were healed, right? Which means also spiritually we were on the highest level. We were tzaddikim, right? It was unbelievable. Unfortunately, didn't last long. We all know we did the sin of the golden calf afterwards. And by the time Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of the 40 years, before we're about to enter the land of Israel, repeats the Ten Commandments, we're on a different level, right? We're not the same people that we were when we received it the first time. So perhaps some of the changes have to do with the fact that now we are not tzaddikim. And I'm going to show you in the one we're going to do today. So next week we'll do a little bit more about some of the differences. We know the most famous difference is the Shabbos one, that in the first one it says Zachar es Yom HaShabbos, right? You should remember the Shabbos to keep it holy. And in the second set it says Shamar, guard. And that's where we learn both the positives of Shabbos and the negatives of Shabbos. Next week, I want to see something today. Today I want to look at the 10th of the Ten Commandments. So on page 970, this is the second set. That's the one we're going to look at more in depth. And I'll show you afterwards the first set. So in the second set, the one that's in our parsha, it says, V'loi, in Pasuk Yud Ches, verse 18, V'loi sachmeid eishes re'echa, right? You shall, and, as you know, so these have ands. And you shall not covet your fellow's wife. V'loi sis ave, beis re'echa, and you shall not desire your fellow's house. Sodeyu, his field, v'avdai, and his servant, v'amasai, and his maidservant, shoyrei, his ox, v'chamoyrei, and his donkey, v'chol asher l'reacha, and everything that belongs to your friend. So just to note, you see here, loy sachmoid, do not covet, and then it says, v'loy sisave, and you shall not desire. Now, I feel that you turn back for a moment. Maybe put something to hold it and turn back just for a moment because I want to show you something. In the original, in Yisra, it's on page 412. I just want to show you what it says there. On page 412, where we have the first of the Ten Commandments, it says in Pasuk Yudalid, Loi sachmeid beis re'echa. It says, do not covet the house of your friend. And then it says, Loi sachmeid eishes re'echa. Do not covet your friend's wife, the avdai and his servant, the amasai and his maidservant, shayra, his oxen, chambayre, his donkey, the chol asher lereacha, and everything that belongs to your friend. Now, I know it would be good if you had them, I should have copied for both, but many differences. This one of the commandments has many differences from the first to the second. Do you notice one of the biggest differences? In the first one, what does it say? Loi sachmeid, right? Do not covet. What does it say in the second one, the one we read in Veschanan on page 970? It says loy sachmei, but then what does it say afterwards? Do you see the loy titave? Do you see that loy sachmei and loy tisave? What's the difference? Do not covet. I know whatever that means. And what is tisave? Desire. Do not desire.
But it's also wife and house.
I know. Switched. Fascinating. 100%, the order. So interesting. There's another addition in Ve'eschanan. What else does it add that you shouldn't covet? There's one more detail that it doesn't mention originally in Yisrael. Because after it says the house, what does it say? In Parshas Ve'eschanan, in 970? The field. It doesn't mention the field in Yisrael. Do you see that? So interesting. It says the wife, it says the house, it says the servants, the oxen, the donkeys, everything that belongs, but it doesn't say the field. Only in the first one it says the second one it says the field, not the first one. So I'll just tell you something interesting about that. That's fascinating. That one relates to us understanding the difference in the situation. In the first of the Ten Commandments, they were on a level like tzaddikim. What was meant to happen after they received these Ten Commandments? What was the trajectory supposed to be? Do you remember? Where were they supposed to be going very soon after? Israel. They thought they're going straight into Israel. What would have happened then, had they not done the golden calf? They would have gone into Israel, built the Beis HaMikdash, and been there forever. No moving out of Israel. We know that one of the beautiful laws in the Torah that takes place in the land of Israel, and only when all of the Jews live in the land of Israel, which means now we don't really keep that halacha, is the halacha of Yovel. You know, we keep Shemitah, but Yovel is the Jubilee, the 50th year. What happens every 50 years? I don't know if you know this. It's an amazing thing. I think it's the most brilliant. Of all, Torah is brilliant in every way. But what it does for the financial well-being, for the social hierarchy of the people, is that every single, if you buy land from somebody, it's only really leasing. Because every 50 years, it's going to return back to its original owner.
But it's not like that in some cases in Israel.
In Israel, okay.
In the contracts of certain properties.
Fascinating.
Yeah, it's still like
it's that. Like a long-term lease. Yes, fascinating thing.
It's actually not yours.
What that does is, if you think about it,
after
it,
50 years.
After, well, I'm hopefully some of them say after 100.
There is something. I'm not sure if it's after 50 years, but there is something about.
It's a very.
I'm almost sure because I know from living there, and and property and things, there is definitely something there.
My brother told me something, that if a person is renting and it's over a certain amount of years, it becomes his own property.
That's interesting.
I couldn't believe
that. That's very interesting. Okay. That would be nice. I don't know. Interesting. But this idea in Torah is to ensure that there is no intergenerational poverty. Because no matter what, somebody falls on hard times, people make wrong choices, or mazel doesn't have a mazel, and things go wrong. So you lose your money, you have to sell your house. Let's say it could happen, but it will be only temporary. It's not going to go on forever because it's going to be restored, right? This is an amazing halacha.
But then does the person who bought it get compensated?
So how it works is, he doesn't. But how it works is, no. When you buy it, you know how many more years, and depending on the years, that's how much it's going to be worth. So if you buy something closer to the Yovel year, you'll pay less initially. You realize, so that becomes part of the process already, because you know, as long as you're aware. And that's, so it's like a long-term lease, and that's the idea. That's what it is. So, yeah, and sometimes it's only a short-term lease, depending, and that's how it will fluctuate.
But if it's a new property, then that
Well, it applies, it does a new, well, I guess if you've conquered a new land, yeah, but generally in the land of Israel, because it was apportioned by tribe, and people received, you know, every family received their portion, which is, it's just incredible, actually. But what does that have to do with this? Because if you think about it, had they entered the land of Israel immediately, and then all the Jewish people would have stayed there, so Yovel would have been forever. So nobody would covet somebody else's field, because they know the field is going to become back to them. It's only in the second set of Luchos, after we sinned, and the fact remains that we know we're going to go into the land of Israel, but we won't be there forever. We're going to leave. And once the Jewish people leave the land of Israel, and only part of them return, we don't have Yovel anymore. So then that becomes part of the equation. You might, yes, covet your friend's field, because sometimes you're going to lose your field and your friend will have more and whatever. So it's just interesting to note how it is dependent on the situation. But that's just on a one detail. But let's understand, as we say, the main difference is this difference of the wording. And we have to understand, what does it mean? And what is this halacha to begin with? And also, if you think about it, the Ten Commandments, right? They're the basis of everything. The basis of the whole Torah. And the first of the Ten Commandments, Anoichi Hashem Elikecha, I am Hashem, your God, that took you out of Egypt, or that created the world. We'll see the differences in the first and second. And then don't have any other gods. And then we talk about not using Hashem's name in vain, and keeping Shabbos, and honoring parents, and not murdering, and not kidnapping. Then we talk about, do not covet. Does it feel like it fits into the scale of all the other things that we're mentioning with these Ten Commandments? In a certain way, it feels like it doesn't belong there. It's, of course, it's not a good thing to be jealous, but is it on that scale that's the basis of the whole Torah, that you shouldn't be jealous? Is that the basis? Is that one of the foundational principles? And does it equal, so to speak, in severity and in, you know, if you want to say, of the first of the Ten Commandments? And especially since we know in Torah concept that everything really goes according to how you conclude. You know, even in English, let's say for some English or whatever it may be, when you write something, or when you express, or people talk about speech writing, they say the most important is the first line and the last line. You know, you have to finish with the bang. So it sounds like we're going to a whole different level of something which is a nice thing, important thing, a value. How does it fit into the Ten Commandments? You know, so why is that such a foundational, and how is it connected to the first of the Ten Commandments? So we've learned many things over time, and people have the perspective, but just to understand before we get to that, what is this commandment? In other words, when do you actually transgress this commandment?
That's a much more common one, that you transgress, than murdering and all those other
things. That's true. You're 100% right. It is. It's 1,000% right. Yeah.
Because it says...
It's 100% right.
Not anything.
I know. Not anything. It makes exactly right. Nothing, right?
It covers everything.
Covers the whole thing. But what I'm asking is more, You see, when we talk about COVID, is it the feeling in the heart or thoughts in the mind or action? What kind of action? And this is an interesting one. The truth is that there are many opinions that say that the only time that you... We're not talking about what's okay. Obviously, it's not okay to be jealous, but we're talking about transgressing this as far as it being one of the Ten Commandments, like what's the severity of it. According to many opinions, the only way you transgress this is if you are jealous of somebody and then in your mind you come up with all kinds of schemes. How am I going to actually obtain it? And then not only do you think, you feel it and you think about it, but you start doing things to get it. So one example might be somebody has something that you really like. You put pressure on the person and you say, first you do it subtly. I really love that, you know, I mean, I would love to have it. I never had the chance. And slowly but surely, you add the pressure until the person feels that they just can't take it anymore.
You can take it already,
right? Or even they sell it to you, but they've been pressured into doing it.
So to me personally, this last commandment is basically, for me, it's interpreting treat others like you want to be treated.
Okay, so that's how you look at it generally, right? In that way. So it's true, it definitely encompasses that. It's 100% right. But is that what the halacha is from it, you see? But you're right, definitely it does. Yeah, that's definitely a big part of it. It's like one of the big ones of V'ahavta l'recha kamecha, really, in a sense. Yeah, 100%. So it's fascinating, fascinating, the halachic discussion. So I just want to quickly tell you that interesting. So according to some opinions, the only time you transgress it is if you actually practically pressure somebody and they actually sell it to you or give it to you. And therefore, how do you do tshuva for it? You have to actually give it back to the person, or, you know, and return the item, right, that they've sold to you. And interestingly, so there's also different opinions. If they sold it to you and you paid them money, then perhaps you haven't transgressed. That's one opinion. But other opinions say, no, if you've put the pressure and the only reason they sold it to you is because they were so pressured, that's still transgressing it. So that's one way. But there are other ways to look at it, that perhaps there are two distinct transgressions here, so to speak. One of them is loy sachmeid, that's the do not covet, that's the first one. And that one does involve the pressure and the obtaining of the item. And loy sisave, which is mentioned in the second one, do not desire, that's the feeling in the heart, the thoughts in the mind, that in loisis ave. And in there are different opinions. According to some opinions, if you just see somebody has something and you want it, you haven't transgressed. But if you see something and you want it, and in your mind you're thinking, how am I going to get it? That's loisis ave, even before you've done anything about it. So see, there's all different ways of understanding it. But generally speaking, we can divide it into two parts, into the feeling part, the part that goes on inside, and the actual doing part of making plans, how am I actually going to get it? So that's really most opinions of how you divide. And according to most opinions, in the first of the Aseres HaDibros, it's only really what comes out is only when you actually make plans and you actually pressure and the person feels forced and they sell it to you. And in the second, it adds the extra layer that even the jealousy in the heart, or at least making the plans in your mind, already you are transgressing this one of the Ten Commandments. Which leads to the big philosophical question. Can the Torah put us in the situation where it gives us a command about a feeling? It's a big question. We have that question when it comes to the mitzvah of loving Hashem. Or, as we talked about, loving another person. How can the Torah command us to love? It's not necessarily in our control. And is it in our control that when we see somebody who has something that we really, really, really want, that we'll have that feeling of really wanting it? Can we control that? So interesting. Because if it's a transgression, that means the Torah doesn't tell us not to do something when it thinks that it's beyond us. That's not the way the Torah works. So it's a fascinating philosophical discussion, which is discussed at length in many places. Now, let me show you something. On your sheets you have, and I know we've done it years ago, but this is a beautiful Ibn Ezra, one of the famous Ibn Ezras. Now, remember we mentioned about the Ibn Ezra, Rav Avraham Ibn Ezra, he's an interesting man who had no mazel in his life, so you could imagine he would have been tested with this many times over. In anything, and moved around a lot, very poor, and lots of tzaras. I don't know, I think one of his sons even converted, everything, like, bad. And he was talented beyond, so it's even more frustrating. Extremely talented man, never made it with money, financially, I don't know, a personal life, a lot of tzaras. And he has an amazing concept that he mentions when it comes to this. And he gives us actually a formula, which he says makes it possible that this can be something that is commanded because it is something we can actually live with. How? It has to do, according to him, with our mindset. So I'll show you on, I numbered the page. What page is it? It's the one that has the Ibn Ezra. Ooh, I don't know what page. I don't have the number. I should have kept one of the booklets, but... if anybody finds it, you can tell me what number page it is. Yeah, probably makes sense. On the bottom, there's a line there. Do you see towards? Yeah, the one that's circled, Ibn Ezra, page 5. Beautiful. So he says like this. How do we understand it? Page number 5, and look on the bottom of the page. Okay. So look what he says. It says like this. Loi sachmeid, do not covet. He says, "Anoshim rabim yitmohu." Many people wonder, "Al zois hamitzvah, on this mitzvah, eich yihye adam shalayach meidavar yafe belibay." How is it possible? Is it possible? Is there a person that will not covet something nice in his heart? You see something beautiful and you don't want it? It's impossible. Kol mashu nechmad l'mare einav, everything that is appealing to the eye. How could it be that we should be told that we are not allowed to cover it? So he says, "Va'ata attain l'chamashal." I will give you an analogy. Da ki yesh ish kafri sheyesh lei das nechayna. He says there is a villager, but one stipulation: this villager has to have a mind that is right. In other words, in Yiddish you would say, he has to be bamzinin. He has to be normal, right? He has to, you know, bamzinin, right? He's got to be a normal person, not somebody who's an irrational, impulsive, whatever, a crazy person. So that's the stipulation. If you consider yourself normal, he's a simple villager. And what happens? He, v'hu ro'a bas melech, one day he happens to go to the capital and he sees the princess, the king's daughter. Shehiyafan, she's beautiful. But he says, this villager, lo yachmeidaisa belibay sheyishkavima, he's not going to desire to be with her. He's not going to have any desire. Why? Ki yada ki zela yitachin, because he knows this is never going to happen. It's not in his world. It's remote beyond. It's like us saying we're going to the moon. That's how the villager looks at the princess. She's not something, it's like we say, zero expectation. He has no expectation of it. Usually, desire comes when you have expectation. That's how it works. I know sometimes we think, no, initial desire. So I guess that's what he means. He means that if you allow that desire to fester for more than a moment, yeah, you might see something and say, wow, wouldn't that be nice? But for a second, and then you'll look away. You know, let's say somebody goes, I don't know, to a magnificent furniture store and it's on a... So you might look around just for fun, but it doesn't mean anything to you. It's not in our world. It's not going to be ours. It's not attainable. And you don't leave with a heavy heart even. Because you never even expected that. That's just not in your realm. So he says something very beautiful. So he says, this is the frame of mind. He says, V'al tachshev zeh kafri, and this person, this villager, doesn't think shehu ke'echad, that he is like one of, it goes on to the next page, one of the, okay, sorry, just want to get this off and I can't, okay. One of the Mishugayim, sheyisave sheyielai knafayim la'ifa shamayim. He doesn't consider or doesn't put himself into the category of some crazy people who will have wings that will fly to the heavens. The truth is interesting because that's what's, you know, the fact that somebody did want to be like a bird is what allowed us to fly now. But the truth is, most of us, when we look at birds, we don't say, I wish I was a bird, or maybe we do, But we know we can't be a bird. And we're not jealous of the birds. Because we know a bird is a bird, we're a person. So he says, it's not possible for it to happen. Sorry, I just need to get this off and I don't know how. Okay, I'm going to get this off today. So I can see. Okay, I'll just make it a drop smaller and I'll be able to see it. Okay. Anyways, okay. So he says, nobody will desire it. So he says like this, Kasher, ain't Adam is Ava Lishkaimai, nobody wants to sleep with their mother. Afa Pishiaf, even if she's beautiful. Kihirgiluhu mina urav ladas shiasura loy, he knows from when he's young, she's forbidden to him. He says, Kacha, the same exact way. Kol maskil, any intelligent person. Tzarech sheyeda ki isha yafe oy mamayin lo yimtza'ena adam ba'avur chachmasai v'daitai. Obviously, this takes a little bit of a proper perspective. Everybody knows that whether it be, as he said, a beautiful woman, whether it be money, anything, anything, a person should know that what you don't have or what you do have is not because you can or you've made the plan and you got it. It's not because you're so smart that you became so wealthy. It's not because you're so smart that you managed to get that or you're so talented. That's just not the way the world works. As he says, and we understand that, we realize that, we know that, he says. And he says, the only reason we have anything is because kasher chalak loy Hashem, it's how Hashem apportioned to him. It's what Hashem designated for him. V'amar kaheles la'adam shaloy amalbay yitnenu chelkay, that a person doesn't work for it and Hashem gives him his portion. Meaning to say, whatever we have is because that's what Hashem decided we are going to have. When we are aware of that, and we're aware of that not just in the back of our mind, but in the front of our mind, that's how we live, then what ends up happening? V'amru chachamim, b'nei chaye u'mezaynei lav b'schusa talya milsa ella b'mazala. This is a very beautiful idea that people don't realize. B'nei chaye u'mezaynei, which is really the three essential things. The children, your life, and your life meaning your health, and mezaynei is your financial status, believe it or not, is not dependent on how good or not good you are. It's not de- what it's yeah. That's it, exactly. It's not dependent on your righteousness, if you're a tzaddik, if you're the greatest person, nothing. It's dependent on your mazel. God decided. Well, it's an amazing thing, because what it does, and it should do for us, we should realize a lot of times when we look around and we think, where did I go wrong or why? It has nothing to do with it. God decided, and that's it. However he decided, that's it. And we have to really internalize that. That goes, so it actually can free us from tremendous guilt and, of course, from tremendous jealousy. And from looking around saying, why can't I have that? Obviously, it's not meant to be. This is not your portion. Your portion has been designated and given to you, and that's all you have. And no matter what you're going to do, you're not going to have any more. And when a person lives with that, as the Evan Ezra says, what does that do for the person? It makes the person look at everything, he says. Bavor ze hamaskil lo yisave, he's not going to have any desire. V'lo yachmeid, as we say, he's not going to covet. V'achar sheyada she'eshes re'eyo asra Hashem lo, right? He knows his friend's wife is forbidden to him. Yaiser, he uses such beautiful language. He says she is even more remote than, as we say, than this princess in the eyes of that villager. Anything that belongs to somebody else is so remote to you. It's so beyond. It's so not in your world. Not even in your eyesight almost. Not in your expectation, that it becomes, even initially, you don't desire it. That's what happens. Maybe for a moment, sometimes we fall into it, but we really immediately, and it doesn't take a lot of work. What takes a lot of work is the original perspective, to really accept that Hashem designated certain things, and that's it. And that's the lot that we have in life. And that's what we accept.
It's a little bit dangerous, because there are people who think, well, that's my muscle, that's what's allotted to me in life, and they don't even try.
Oh, I love it, Sylvia. 100, it's a big way. 100 is a good question. Mm-hmm. That is the big million-dollar question when it comes to bitachon, how to balance both. Mm-hmm. So you're 100% right. There is always that danger that a person can say, it's not my mazel. I guess I'm meant to live on welfare and just, you know, not go to work and not get up in the morning and never meet anybody and never have friends and all that kind of thing. That's my lot in life. No, so Torah has an interesting, it's not interesting, it's actually quite a challenging way we're meant to live. It's a unique Torah way in that we are meant to hold two truths at the same time. The one truth is that we have to put effort into things. Sheishes yomim tasim alachtecha. 6 days you got to go to work. And you have to do the work with the full capacity, with all the talent Hashem gave you, with all the ability, as much as possible. At the same time, know that any result, any success is not in your hands. So it's a hard one because you think that if you know that, why should you put the effort? We put the effort because Hashem said so. That's all. That's the only reason. It's hard because we're meant to really put the effort. But it's more than just Hashem said so. It's Hashem gave us, you know what it is? It's even part of that acceptance. Hashem gave us our lot in life. Now, when we talk like that, it sounds so negative. But that means he gave us all our abilities, all our talents, our personality, everything we have, our intelligence. The fact that perhaps somebody, and when we talk about it, we know now, thank God, that things have opened up much more. And it's not just black and white. Like they used to have like this IQ test. You know, somebody's either 110 IQ, 120, and therefore they can be very successful. No, obviously there's emotional intelligence, there's talents, there's abilities. There's so many beautiful personality traits that Hashem gave it to us. And if Hashem gave it to us, and that's our lot, we have to use it to its utmost, to the most that we can, and put the most effort in. But no, again, the result is only in the hands of Hashem. So that's the two truths, and they go together as a Jew, because we can have high expectations of ourselves. Yes?
I've recently been reading about the partnership between Hashem and man. And it's about, yes, we've got to do our bit, and then Hashem will do it.
That's it. That's it.
So, in a way, it is a bit of a, you know, if you don't use the gifts he's given you,
I know, then you won't.
He will not, you know, then he'll stand back.
It's
whereas
true.
If you do use it and you put it in your maximum effort,
meet your half, 100%, 100%. No, that is true. That is true. That's why what we say is the very interesting line: Hakol bidei shamayim, chutz miyiras shamayim. Everything's in the hands of heaven, except for the fear of heaven. So, what does that mean? That means when we're talking about that, that's true. When it comes to mainly, and the truth is, a lot fits into this category. It's what we want to accomplish in this world, which is not just spiritual, but it's all the goodness that we want to do. So the truth is that as a Jew, we believe even the mundane things can be elevated. And when we do things with meaning and purpose, yes, we put all we can in, and Hashem does. Mida keneged mida, measure for measure. He does definitely 100% meet us. But again, that's if he chooses. And we know there are times in life that a person can put the most incredible effort and really tick all the boxes, 100%, and things still don't work out. They just don't. We know that. We all have that experience. And like I say, and sometimes we don't even tick all the boxes. And that's also something. You know, when we look back and we reflect, we say, maybe I could have done it better. Maybe I could have done it differently. Maybe I could have made different choices. Part of bitachon is to, when we look back, is to say somehow that was meant to be. That day I was meant to be tired. That day I was meant to snap. That day I was whatever. It had a bad effect, it did, but it was meant to happen. So we have to also accept that. And that was also our lot in life for that day. That doesn't mean that forward we do the same choices, but still we have to accept. And that's a very big part. So yeah, it goes, but yeah, that's how it works. So as Evan Ezra says, this can be a commandment because we are all in control of that mindset. It all boils down to that mindset. And when we have that mindset, this will work. Now, where does that mindset start from? Anoichi Hashem Elokecha. When you truly accept that I am Hashem your God, and He runs the world, He's the one that not only created the world originally, but actually is involved in the day-to-day running. That's why it says, take us out of Egypt. So He gets involved in our life. Once we truly internalize that, then loisachmoid becomes possible. Not only possible, but it actually becomes, even though it's like one of the negatives, it becomes such an incredibly freeing, beautiful way of living, because we're not busy looking out at what everybody else has and what we are missing. Instead, what do we yes have, and what am I going to do today with what I do have? And that's what we live for. And that's the only way to live, really, if we want to live properly. And that's the real joyous way. So that's how he said. I just want to see, just read one last line, because as he says it so beautifully, he says, as we know, a person will not even, he won't even want it. He won't, it will be just beyond him. He won't desire anything that's not his. Ki yada Hashem le'rotza la'sais la'isa. Not only does he know that it's not his lot, but Hashem doesn't want to give it to him. And therefore, of course, he can't get it no matter what he's going to do, not in his strength, not with his mind, not with all his scheming. It's never going to happen. Al kein yiftach, as we said, comes betachen. So therefore, he trusts bebayrei in his creator, sheyichal kalenu, that he will actually supply him and give him everything he needs. V'yasa ha'toyv be'einav, and he will do what's good in his eyes. And that's the end of the Aseres HaDibreis. And that's the conclusion, as he says, of the Aseres HaDibreis. That's how we, so to speak, realize how it really, really beautifully goes together. There was a lot more, and I want to... time is really running. But there's a beautiful Mishnah in Pirkei Avos that says, three things make a person leave the world. Ha-kina, ha-taiva, v'ha-kavid. Kina is jealousy. Taiva is desire, and kavod is honor. And they remove a person from this world. That's what it says. In other words, they're terrible. They cause a person terrible consequences. And of course, the Mefarshim will ask, why single out these three? I mean, there's many other bad traits that a person might have. And as you said before, they say it actually because in these three traits, really, everything can fall into these categories. So one of the things that it does say, when it talks about Lo Yisachmeid, actually even in the Ten Commandments, it says it comes at the end because it actually is a summary. If a person will not desire, or if a person, let's say if you put it in the positive, if a person does desire, what might end up happening is they might commit adultery, they might even murder, and we do see that's what happens. They might kidnap because they want something that somebody else has, and that's a blockage for them to get it. So that's why the best way to ensure that you don't get to all those negative things, those terrible negative things, is don't be jealous and don't desire something that doesn't belong to you. So that's how the formula really works in the perfect way, that this enables you to actually keep all of the Ten Commandments in the proper way. I just want to see, because on these sheets, they're such beautiful ideas. He says... also he says that these three things are actually the natural, you know, honor and desire. These are things that a person naturally, you know, has, so to speak. And not only that, and that's some things that people actually stumble constantly. It's somehow, that's the way it is. And he says that it also, as we say, cause us to go against all of the Torah. So he says a very interesting thing, because when a person, first of all, if you're jealous of somebody else, you will actually transgress many, many averis. He says you will not do kindness with somebody else because you're jealous of him. So you won't do any of those mitzvahs which are to do with doing kindness. You might not invite them to your house. You won't do achnas sarchim. You might not give them tzedakah. You might not visit them when they're sick. In other words, it'll make you avoid so many of the mitzvahs that we want to be able to do. So of course, that's something that we really have to stay far away from. He says also you might even harm them, actually cause them harm, both in financially and physically. And there's a very interesting pasuk that Shlomo HaMelech says in Mishlei. He says, Urekav atzameis kina, that jealousy actually rots the bones. That's what it does. And you know, it's poetically, people have even, you know, in many times it talks about jealousy literally eating up our insides. That's what jealousy does. And the Torah does talk about that and the ramifications of that and how strong and how obviously sad it is when this happens. I just wanted to see, because there were so many beautiful ideas. So let's see which other one we have here. So all the financial things also, it could be unfortunate that a person will transgress. And also jealousy unfortunately starts out small and is unfortunately has no bounds, and it just grows and grows and grows. And the more you indulge in it, actually, the more it takes over. That's also another thing with it. That's one of the worst middas possible. And also, it doesn't leave a person to have any tranquility, any menucha. As we know, when a person is racked with jealousy, their whole mind becomes focused on it. That's a very sad thing. It mamish literally takes over everything. And he says a very interesting thing. He says, if somebody's jealous, so the language that the Mishnah says, it makes the person leave the world. Why use such a language? So he says, when you talk about midah keneged midah, measure for measure, so he says, somebody who's jealous, usually when you transgress something, it's a funny kind of thing, you know, so if a person transgresses and they have to be punished after they pass away, so they have some time that they go to Gehenim, right? But he says, what happens if somebody's jealous? What do they do to the person? First, they take him into Gan Eden for a moment, and then they take him out of Gan Eden and they put him in Gehenim. Why? Because they want to tease him. Just like he was jealous of others, right, throughout his life. So now they take him to Gan Eden where he can see the good that others are enjoying, and then they remove him. That's why the language is used, Maitzi'in min ha'ilam. They remove him from the world, from his, so to speak, good world. The idea being, obviously, we're not looking at the negative, but the idea being, as we're saying in the positive, it's more the concept of concentrating and looking inward, not outward in this way. But we all know that there is one positive thing to jealousy. Because sometimes jealousy can motivate a person to growth. And this is what we call in Torah, there's a concept of kina seifim tar b'chochma. That if you see somebody who's better, like has good midis, does something good, or learns a lot, or knows a lot, or is on a higher level, or responds properly, or doesn't get angry, whatever it may be, and you look at them and you think, oh my gosh, if only. So even with that, you have to be careful, because jealousy is such a rotten kind of thing, where many, many times what jealousy is, and that's also a big discussion as far as even the thought process, is it that you want what somebody else has, or is it that you want it that they shouldn't have it? That's according to some the transgression. It's not so much that you want what they have, it's more that you want it, and if you can't have it, they shouldn't have it. So that's according to some is when you transgress. So there is the worry also, even with good things, that when you're jealous, you might sometimes look at another person and say, oh, I wish he wasn't so good. That makes me look much worse. You know, it could be that. However, on the flip side, if you can channel, that's what they talk about, because this is a very beautiful idea that's mentioned by the Pri Tzadik and many of the Mefarshim, because it is an emotion that Hashem created. There must be a purpose to it. So we have to channel. It's interesting, some people are more prone to this than others. Some people really live in their own world. You do find that. You see it with children. Some children are just satisfied always, you know, they're never looking at anybody else. They don't care. They're happy, you know, content. Naturally. Most of us are more in the middle. And some people are more challenged. If a person is more challenged, where they do notice a lot of what's going on around them, and they don't have that inner contentment, and they find it very difficult, they should channel it in a good way. By looking at things that other people have that you can grow from, and learning from them, and trying to emulate them so that you actually do get what they have. Because they don't lose it at that point. Nobody's going to lose out, only gain. So that's how we're meant to live with it, in that positive way. So channel the jealousy, and that's the beautiful way. Otherwise, it's one of the most rotten traits possible, that's as it says. And it causes such terrible, terrible things. And it causes also for you in your own life, the most, as we talked about, exactly the opposite of what we mentioned before, then you definitely don't sleep at night. You definitely don't have that inner tranquility. A person who has bitachin cannot have jealousy. It doesn't go together. It's a contradiction. Contradiction in terms. That's one of the measures of our bitachin. So when we feel contentment, and when we feel satisfied, and when we look at ourselves and say, yeah, that's what Hashem... Okay, so I'm not saying, sometimes we do. We want things to change, you know, we want to be healthy. Everybody wants our children, everything to be, of course, we should have revealed good. That's not a bad thing to ask 100%. However, we ask for that in the context of, from Hashem to give us, and not because we don't want somebody else to have it, or because somebody else has it, and therefore we want it. Then we live so much of a calmer, tranquil, meaningful, purposeful, and an incredibly emotional, healthy life. So that's why, actually, it really makes sense for it to be the final of the Ten Commandments. So we'll just leave it there. I know there are a few other beautiful Steve next week.